Welcome to Vegas World. It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega, thanking you all for tuning in. A little bit of craziness going on here in Vegas World. We were supposed to be doing Three Ninjas Knuckle Up Watch Along with Caden Green and Aaron Nova. However, Caden sneezed so hard that it ripped a hole in the space-time continuum, creating a portal, possibly demonic, maybe alien, considering the fact that Caden and Aaron are involved. Not quite sure. I'm going to have to investigate further. However, when this portal was created, Caden and Aaron were sucked in. So no, I have to find them because I'm not going to do this watch along without them. I need to find them. And this week we're going to be doing From Dusk Till Dawn, Season 1. A lot of you may be perplexed by what I just said because you didn't realize that From Dusk Till Dawn was a TV show. You remember the 1996 movie written by Quentin Tarantino, directed by Robert Rodriguez, and starring George Clooney in his first ever movie role. It was his big break into movies. At that point, he was riding high off of the success of ER, where he played Doug Ross, and he was looking to get out of TV. And Quentin Tarantino happened to be a director on an episode of ER. This was, you know, after his fame from Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. Robert Rodriguez is the big talk of the town for his movie Desperado. Before that was El Mariachi, which he made for $7,000. It showed he can make a effective movie very cheaply. And at this time, you know, they're the talk of Hollywood. They're the big rock stars in Hollywood. And everybody was trying to snatch up anything written by Quentin Tarantino. And Robert Rodriguez felt that they should make this movie, From Dusk Till Dawn, next, because while they were riding the high of Pulp Fiction, if they didn't do that now, they might not ever get the chance to do it if, you know, other projects, I guess, weren't as successful, or it was just the right time, the momentum, because they had everybody wanting to work with them. So what better way to get this weird project off the ground? I say weird because it's almost a tale of two different films. From Dusk Till Dawn starts out like a heist film. You know, it's two bank robbers on the run from the law trying to get to Mexico. They take a family hostage. They get into Mexico, and as they're waiting to make their deal, they happen to come across vampires, and it turns into a B-movie monster film. Very weird. Rarely done. Nothing to this magnitude, I don't think, has been done as far as like a hard genre shift in the middle of a movie. Only Quentin, right? But what's even more interesting about that whole thing itself is the story behind the story, because that wasn't initially an idea created by Quentin Tarantino, so to speak. Robert Kirkman, who was the head of KMB EFX, was the guy who conceived the story and wrote a treatment, and he hired Quentin Tarantino to write the script. Tarantino at this time had Natural Born Killers and True Romance circling around Hollywood. He hadn't made Reservoir Dogs yet. Pulp Fiction hasn't been made yet. And this was his first real writing gig. He was paid $1,500 for it. And the other stipulation added was that KNB had to provide the ear effects for his scene in Reservoir Dogs, you know, the famous ear scene where Mr. Blonde chops off the cop's ear. Yeah, great stuff. And what a trade-off, right? Hey, you do this for me, I'll do this for cheap, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, after all of that, it blew up. They made this film, and fast forward to 2013, Robert Rodriguez becomes the head of a network. He creates the El Rey Network, a network that showed old school grindhouse films, blaxploitation films, kung fu movies, anything that fits into Robert Rodriguez's wheelhouse that you know him for was probably shown on this network. And From Dusk Till Dawn became the first series on that network. He always wanted to expand the lore of From Dusk Till Dawn because we got bits and pieces of it in the movie. It wasn't really a whole lot explained, and a lot of the stuff that you saw in the movie wasn't necessarily in the script. For example, the closing shot where you see the temple above the strip club was not in the script. It was just something added last minute because Robert thought it'd be really cool to see that, you know, these vampires had been around for centuries and they've been doing this for a very long time. Cause like showed the temple and it had all these trucks and cars all in this big pit. It was really neat. And Robert wanted to have Quentin Tarantino's characters in a television setting because he felt that they were built for that sort of thing. And what better way to have your own show, being the showrunner, the writer, and director, is when you're the head of the network. So you don't have to worry about being canceled. You're free to do whatever it is you want to do with that. And I mean, that's a tough task in itself because From Dusk Till Dawn is an iconic film with a huge fan base, and it's one of my favorite films of all time. But as I said, he's the head of the network, the showrunner, the writer, director. Robert Rodriguez wears a lot of hats. He's a pretty much akin to a modern day John Carpenter, where he does a lot of the stuff himself. He operates the camera himself. He writes a lot of the music on his films. He's does it all. And that's a kind of a lost art in Hollywood, or a big no-no, because, you know, with unions and everything, you work this one thing and that's all you do. But he feels it stifles the creative efforts, and with owning his own studio, has his own props people and costume people. He can do pretty much everything in-house, and it lent itself very well to working on the show. Now, I know a lot of people may be like, oh, well, the movie's better than the show. The show's gonna suck. It doesn't compare. They're not the same thing. It's not as cool as George Clooney and all that. And you're right, it's not the same. And you shouldn't expect it to be the same. I know that happens a lot with remakes or reboots. It always gets compared to the original. And I love the way that Robert Rodriguez explained the show. If the movie is the short story, the TV show is the novel. It's inevitable that I'm going to have to talk about them and compare the show and the movie, because the entire first season is based around the movie. They obviously go in a different direction than what you expect them to do, because you know the movie, and that's really cool and unique in certain elements of it, which I will get into as we go along. But I'm not going to do the whole, oh, this sucks because it's not like the movie. I'm definitely going to have to compare the actors and their performances as those characters, given what I know from the films, but it's not going to be the end-all be-all. It's just going to be a reference. And let's get into it a little bit. The vampires on the show, the Calabras, as they are called, is a very interesting twist on the vampire mythos, because they're steeped in Aztec, Mayan, Mesoamerican mythology and actual blood cults that existed around that time period of recorded history. They used a lot of that to create these vampires. And it's interesting how they resemble snakes more than they do bats. I mean, they got venom glands. Their teeth look like, you know, fangs on a snake. It's really cool. Wilmer Valderrama, who plays Carlos the Madrigal, he does this really interesting thing with his neck that he moves it like as if he is a legitimate snake. It's crazy. He thought that Robert Rodriguez was going to shit all over it when he saw it, when they were filming it. And he was like, oh, that's really cool. And other actors were like, they didn't understand how he was able to do that with his neck. So cool. And while other iterations of vampires explode upon sunlight coming into contact with them, the Calabras, they slow cook, essentially. I mean, their skin starts to burn, and eventually they'll explode or cease to be. But they can be out during the daytime if they're covered in shade or what have you. Really interesting take, different, unique spin on vampires. Aside from that, Satanico Pandemonium also has a lot more to do in the show. She's treated more as a goddess, and the head are one of the higher ups in the vampire hierarchy. The Titty Twister is her palace. It was designed for her by the Lords of the Night, and that's where she rules. She can't ever leave the place. It was an old temple that, you know, they converted to look like a strip club in order to entice people to come, and they'd use them for food, obviously. I mentioned the Nine Lords, the Lords of the Night. The Calabras have a hierarchy. The Lords of the Night are the top of the food chain. They're counselors, you know, below them. And then below those are the Calabra's the regular foot soldiers, I guess. You know, they kill most of the humans, and then they send majority of the blood or prime cuts of human to the higher-ups. And so it's weird sort of slave-to-slaves kind of thing. You know, there's a real tension between some of the classes that adds a wrinkle to the story and fuels Santanico Pandemonium's purpose within this season. Santanico Pandemonium in the show is played by Issa Gonzalez. She was in Baby Driver, Fast and Furious, Kong vs. Godzilla. And this show was actually her first American show or project ever. She knows two languages, and like, she didn't even really know what she was doing until she got there the day of, and her first scene on her first day was literally being thrown into a pit of snakes. So that's one way to get acclimated or introduced to American television, or just in general to working on From Dusk Till Dawn, right? The Gecko Brothers, Seth and Richie, are played by DJ Catrona and Zane Holt. DJ Catrona was in Shazam, G.I. Joe. Zane Holt was in Perks Being a Wallflower, The Hunter Killer, Hypnotic, and they do a fantastic job. I felt the camaraderie between the two instantly as soon as they appeared on screen. While, you know, George Clooney is a hell of an act to follow, DJ Catrona does a wonderful job as Seth Gecko. Zane Holt does tremendous as Richie. I know he plays the character leagues better than Quentin Tarantino. I said I wasn't gonna compare and contrast, say, oh, this sucks more than the other. But as far as if I'm gonna compare the two performances, I mean, Zane knocks it out of the park. And while in the movie he's a full-out psychopath, there's no real redeeming qualities about him. In the TV show, all the heinous acts he does is more or less because of the fact that he's being brainwashed, in a sense. He hears voices, he sees things that aren't there, people suddenly become demon-like monsters. So all of his actions are because of what's going on and how this knife he's been presented is affecting him. The knife has a part to do with it, and the knife itself is crazy looking. It's made out of bone and then obsidian, that said. And it does, it shows you things in your mind or plays tricks on you. It's really wild what Zane or Richie Gecko in the show goes through. And we see them working as a well-oiled machine, and that they've done this for years and years. They even alluded to the fact that they committed 35 bank heists before this. And on the 36th one, Seth gets caught because Richie wasn't a part of the job. But you see how well and how proficient Richie is. He's a box man, as they say. He knows how to crack a safe. He's a prolific strategist. But on the course of their Abilene bank heist, which we get to see, they allude to it in the movie, but in the show we see the full-blown thing, and we start to see him unravel and scaring his own brother. You know, Seth doesn't know what to make of it and doesn't know what to say or what to do in order to get his brother to not do all the things he's doing. He's repeatedly calling Carlos to ask him what to do or try to get help because he's worried about his brother, but Carlos is saying, just trust your brother. He sees things you don't. Alluding to the fact that Carlos knows a lot more. And when we introduce to Carlos, you know, it looks like he's a part of a regular old cartel, as he is in the movie. But then as he's walking through his office, you start to see all this old stuff from way back, like 5 centuries before or other things, and just really weird occult stuff that's like, all right, this dude's into a lot more than just the usual cartel stuff. Because I appreciate and love the behind-the-scenes making of, whether it be music or movies, especially movies, and the writing process and how they go about their creative choices. The gun that Seth Gecko in the show uses is an Alaskan Ruger, which is apparently supposed to be used to cut a bear in half should a bear attack you while you're out camping or whatever. It's a gnarly-looking gun, and DJ Catrona looks like such a badass with it in his hand. He said it was really heavy to hold and it took him a little bit to get used to it. And by the fifth or sixth episode, they were talking about getting rid of it. And he was like, what if I just put it in my waistband, even though I ran out of bullets? Because he got really attached to that gun. He felt it was a big piece of the character and he learned how to hold it. So why are we going to get rid of it now, right? Earl McGraw, who is played by the great Michael Parks in the movie, is played by another legendary actor in the TV show, Don Johnson. He does a fantastic job as playing Earl. Earl in this version, well, in the movie, he's a hard-ass, hard-nosed ranger. In the show, he's counting down the days and tallying up how many days he actually got to spend with his daughter and how they weren't a whole lot. And if you're going to be a ranger, you can't have family ties. But if you're gonna have that, you need to figure out how to make the quality time with them matter because you're not gonna get a whole lot of it. And he sounds like he's close to retirement or just really worn out from doing the job. And he's revered as a Texas Ranger. And he's got a partner named Freddy Gonzalez, who was played by Jesse Garcia. Jesse also wasn't aware of who his character was going to be or what exactly he was going to do on the show until he got there. That's another fun fact, too. I forgot to mention I was talking about Wilder Valderrama as he was playing Carlos. He also didn't realize that he was going to be playing a bad guy until he got there. And that was one of his first bad guy roles. But back to Jesse Gonzalez as Freddy Gonzalez. You know, he's fairly new on the force, and Earl is somebody who's looked after him ever since he was a small kid, and they're partners, and they come across the Gecko brothers in Benny's World of Liquor. Earl gets shot because of the visions Richie's having. Freddy wants to give up, but old Earl McGraw's like, I didn't get shot for you to let these guys go, and if I'm gonna die here, you better follow them to the gates of hell. As he said, it's a really badass line. It's also funny too that Don Johnson was only on set for 4 days out of the 5 month shoot. He appears in 4 to 5 episodes, if I'm not mistaken, but those episodes didn't have a script yet, and Don was only there for 4 days, and Robert Rodriguez had the writers come up with stuff for him to shoot with Don that they could put into later episodes. They had an idea of where they were going with the show, but they didn't have fully developed scripts yet. So that was really neat. Again, I am fascinated by the creative process when it comes to writing and how filmmakers decided pick certain things and why they pick the shots they do or with creative choices behind all of that. Really fascinating stuff. It gives me creative ideas and makes me think about stuff when I'm writing. So just a fun aside. And Freddy Gonzalez, obviously, is an original character for the show. He wasn't in the movie, but it's a nice character addition to thread the story from the liquor store to later in the bar in Mexico. And, you know, Freddy goes off the reservation. He wants to live up to his word to Earl that he was going to hunt them down no matter what it took. He defied his captain's orders and follows them all the way to El Paso or the motel they're staying at and all this other stuff. An ad-libbed line from the movie where Seth tells Santanico, "No thanks, I've already had a wife," also created another character in Vanessa Stiles. She is the ex-wife of Seth Gecko, and she is played by Adrienne Palicki. I hope I'm saying that name right, but she was in 2 episodes. The dynamic between her and Seth is very chaotic. And she's supposed to leave with Seth and Richie to Mexico. But Seth pays her to stay away and that he needs to see Richie to El Rey because he feels that he owes him. Their dad died in a fire, and Richie was the one who got Seth out. And ever since then, Seth feels like he owes it to his brother because they were abused by their father and made to learn all the things this they do know and pretty much followed in his footsteps, even if necessarily they didn't want to, and they hated him. In season one, Seth doesn't have the full iconic neck and arm tattoo that George Clooney has in the movie, which was based off of the film We Were Once Warriors. It was a New Zealand movie, and he got the idea of from a tribal for that. But he doesn't have it the full tattoo here. He has it on his arm, and he got it because of his brother as something they did when they were drunk. And it was a memento or memory of the traumas of their childhood and what they overcame. So it's funny, again, when you go to expand a story, how little throwaway things or things that were insignificant in the movie take on a life of its own in the TV show. The Fuller family, Jacob, Scott, and Kate, the patriarch of the family, Jacob Fuller, is played by Robert Patrick of Terminator 2 fame. And the guy is in a lot of stuff. He's in Double Dragons as Kokoshuko, one of my favorite childhood movies of all time. I don't care if it's bad. He's taken over the role from Harvey Keitel, and Robert Patrick adds a lot of layers to Jacob that weren't necessarily in the movie. He plays the vulnerable, struggling pastor who lost his wife. You know, he tells the kids that their mom died in a car accident because of a faulty brakes and a deer came into the road. And there's a whole lot of mystery and darkness surrounding that whole ordeal and why their dad has packed them up in an RV and decided to head towards Mexico. Harvey Keitel had a sense of strength that he gave to the character, and Robert Patrick has that too, but you see a lot of the inner turmoil and conflict and darkness within Jacob as he's played by Robert Patrick in the show. Madison Davenport plays Katie, and she does a fantastic job. She was 17 at the time when they were filming this. She's one of the youngest cast members on the show. The actor who played Scott, Brandon Suhu, he was 18 at the time. He's a martial artist. You could see a lot of that in his performance. They even make a quip in the middle of the season, how he kind of looks like Bruce Lee. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, he plays the role tremendous. He gives a lot of depth to Scott that wasn't in the movie at all. And I know Ernest Liu was not a trained actor. That was his first ever role, and he didn't have a whole lot to work with. But in terms of the show, like, Brandon gives him a lot of depth, and you get a sense that he doesn't like bullies. He might have been bullied at some point himself, given the fact that he's Chinese and his adopted parents are white, they're Baptists, and all that whole dynamic in being in a small town in Texas. I think they're from Texas. I know they said they're from Bethel, which I'm assuming is somewhere in Texas, or at least somewhere in the South, given how they are portrayed. But the dynamic between Kate and Scott is pretty good. They have great chemistry together. You can obviously tell that they are siblings, and they treat them as such. You get a lot more from them in this than you did in the movie, acting brother sister like. And there's a lot of anger hidden underneath it all. Like, again, they allude to his deposition in school and everything, and how he lives his life and what he may be feeling. But you get a big sense of that in the titty twister. And then when he tries to save his family from the geckos when they're at the border, I feel like Madison Davenport is the linchpin of the show, in a sense. The way she interacts with everybody and how she highlights everybody's characters, in a sense, especially her own too, with how she shows like the inner strength that Kate has. But you know, she brings out a lot of the humanity in Richie, even though like he's been an utter psychopath as long as they've known him, but she sees something more in him. She brings that out of him. She also brings out the protective side of Seth. In one scene in particular, when they're getting to the bar, you know, the guy's like, oh yeah, we just added cherry pie to the menu. And he decks the dude straight in the nose. And Katie gives this reaction like, oh my God, no one's ever done that for me before. And she has this like almost smile on her face and shock that Seth did that for her. And even later on, when Professor Aiden Tanner is discovered in the temple, and Jacob and Seth are trying to figure out who he is, and she said that he tried hitting on her earlier, like, Seth, you know, cocks the gun and goes, you filthy freak, and, you know, her dad goes up to confront him. Hilarious moment. Now, Professor Aidan Tanner is played by Jake Busey. Aidan Tanner is an archaeologist, and he was helping Freddy Gonzalez on the cartel killer case and giving him information about the blood cults. And eventually he's the one who gives all the characters the backstory on the Calabras. Since he's been studying that world, he's been following the cult for over 10 years at the time of the events in the bar. He's hilarious. And the way he performs the character as a sexual deviant, but then when he's like teaching people about the mythology, he's almost a showman when he's doing it. I love to hate the character. And there's a twist with him that when I first saw it, I died laughing. I'm not going to say it because I want you to watch it and see for yourself. And my overall thoughts on it, if you're expecting like every line to have that snappy Quentin Tarantino dialogue that you're familiar with in all his works, especially in Dusk Till Dawn, you're not going to get it. I mean, they got some clever lines in there and the dialogue flows, and it still has the feel of From Dusk Till Dawn and a Tarantino character, but it's not necessarily the same. And the show itself overall plays like a crime procedural with supernatural elements. I mean, there are some gory moments, obviously, when dealing with vampires, but it's not overly gratuitous in the way the movie is at times, because the movie is B-level schlock. And, you know, again, the show does have the B-movie grindhouse elements to it, but it doesn't oversaturate the whole thing. Like I said, it's more of a crime drama, and that's what I like about it. You could take out the supernatural elements and you'd still have a compelling story with complex characters and all the pulpy crime stuff that you would love from the genre. You can find the show on Amazon Prime. I am one of the few people probably who own the Blu-rays. I own the whole series, and I knew because like, it was going to be hard to find on streaming. Like, it popped up on Netflix for a couple of years right after season one. And that was part of their international deal to get, because not every country got El Rey. But it's a fun show. It's worth the watch. If you're a fan of the movie, I'm certain you will like this a lot. Now, again, you're going to have to go in with the expectations you're not going to get the movie when you watch the show. It's a whole different beast. Even if you're not a fan of the movie, or have never seen the movie, I think you will find things to enjoy about it. And again, it's expansion of the first movie, and it really, the way they end it, it makes you interested in what they're doing after that, because after that they don't have the movie to follow. They can go their own way and they could take it any way they want to, and that was one of the things that excited me after the ending of episode 10, is like, all right, now where are they going to take the show? It was a lot of fun going back and watching this season to prep for this episode. It was also fun to listen to the commentary tracks with the showrunners and writers and the episodes where Robert Rodriguez had the cast with them, and how a lot of them didn't necessarily know all of what they were going to be doing on the show and who they were playing, and they found out the day of, and they told funny anecdotes about how the costume designer was always amused when, like, seeing their reactions when they figured out exactly what they were doing, what their purpose on the show was going to be, and how he managed to get Don Johnson and Robert Patrick, some of the bigger names on the series, to be a part of it. Another notable name that was a part of the show was Fede Alvarez, the director of Alien Romulus and Evil Dead. He was the director of the 8th episode called La Conquista, and hearing his commentary was pretty funny, especially given the fact that he knew it was going to be From Dusk Till Dawn, and he was kind of thrown off at first with it being set 5 centuries ago, but he figured, I guess, oh, it's going to be backstory for one of the characters, cool. And he brought some of his Evil Dead camera work into the episode, really neat. It was also funny hearing how it just happened on a whim, too, because they met at South by Southwest. You know, they were at the Troublemaker Studios, and he felt it would be rude if he didn't introduce himself to Robert Rodriguez. And he was like, yeah, it'll be cool to work with you someday. And then he ended up on this show. I'm especially a big fan of more of the character moments within the show than the gore or the crime thriller aspect of it. And you can find it on Amazon Prime for like $3. There's only 10 episodes per season, so it's a easy watch. I think they're about 45 minutes long. And yeah, I'm going to be talking about seasons 2 and 3 within the coming weeks in between my Three Ninjas watch along with Caden Green and Aaron Nova, assuming I find them within a week, you know, because I don't know how these space-time continuums work or the portal they went through. If I find them by next week, we will be doing the Three Ninjas Knuckle Up watch along. The last one was a whole lot of fun, and I expect no different from this one. I have never seen Knuckle Up. I didn't realize I've heard the name. I always, as a kid, I always confused Kickback with Knuckle Up, but I never actually watched the movie or knew the premise. So it's interesting watching it as an adult and having such an affinity for the first movie. And that's all for this week. Party on. You can find me at the JC Vega on all social media platforms. You can find the podcast on Instagram at Vegas World Pod, and you can leave your recommendations there for future movies, television shows, comic books, books, whatever it is you would want me to talk about. You could send your suggestions there, or you could email us at vegasworldpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, I am JC Vega. This is Vegas World. Party on. And good night.